Well, good morning. I want to welcome you to Hill Country Bible Church, and we want to welcome those of you joining us at Steiner Ranch and Brushy Creek, and those of you who are joining us this evening, I want to welcome you to the service as well. So, there was a horrified look that went across the faces of the parents of the freshman girls as they drove onto the campus of Old Dominion to start the school year. As they passed the Sigma Nu fraternity house, there were three bed sheets holding the most horrific signs you could imagine. The first one read, "Rowdy and fun, hope your baby girl is ready for a good time." Second one over the door, "Freshman daughter drop off." And the third one, "Go ahead and drop off mom too." Now, as much as people were horrified by seeing this, anybody that knows a little bit about what goes on the college campus understands that this is exactly what the guys are thinking about on the college campus. But it's not just college students. People were horrified to find out that their accounts had been hacked. 35 million of us, sorry, I didn't have one, 35 million of you on the Ashley Madison website, where the advertisement is, "Life is short, have an affair," specifically targeting people that are married or in a committed relationship on how to find somebody in the area that you can get together with. Our social media has adapted to our culture. The app Tinder is being used to connect people together for various reasons, where you can post a picture of yourself and those can search through there to find out if they want to connect with you. Vanity Fair did an article on what's actually happening with many people, went into a upscale New York club and interviewed a group of young men, and here's what they say. You could talk to two or three girls at a bar and pick up the best one. Think about that. Or you can swipe a couple hundred people a day. The sample size is so much larger, it's setting up two or three Tinder dates a week, and chances are sleeping with all of them, so you could rack up 100 girls you've slept with in a single year. Interesting culture that we live in today. This summer, the hashtag LoveWins flooded social media. And we raised the question, what does that mean? Like, if love is winning in our culture, is this what we call love? And so we started a series called Love Actually to try to kind of understand what does the Bible say about love and what does the Bible say about marriage and why children. And so we've been in this series and we've been wrestling with this. And one of the big things we struggle with in our culture is that change is happening so rapidly, it's hard to do the cause and effect thing, to connect what are the causes that are creating the changes that we see here. Now, you guys understand the law of cause and effect, right? It's reasonably easy to understand. So the idea is, like, I'm holding this book, okay? I'm holding the Bible. If the cause, I let go of it, and it drops, the effect, cause and effect. Now, some of you guys are technical, and you say, well, it's actually gravity, and it's really correlation, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you're smart. We know that, okay? But for the rest of us, we understand sometimes when we do things or believe things, there is an effect of that. So what happens when we let go of the meaning of love as something that is other-centered, a choice to choose you for your benefit? The effect is it becomes a desire. What can I get out of this relationship? If we let go of the idea that marriage is actually a covenant between two people, then the effect is that we start seeing marriage as a contract to be entered into. So here's the question I want to raise today. If we let go of the idea that sex is actually a precious gift given by God for marriage and the possibility of children, what is the effect? Could it be possible that what we're left with is seeing sex as something that's primarily a biological drive that is for my own personal fulfillment? If that happens, and if that's what has happened, I just want to raise some provocative questions. Let me just say, these questions are going to be highly controversial. For those of you who are visiting Hill Country Bible Church, some of you may like say, I don't like the question. I don't like the question. What are you talking about? Like, I don't like the question. Well, here's what we do here. Just, you know, just kind of bring you into the whole discussion here. Here, we like to actually talk about controversial things from time to time. And when we do that, we just invite everybody to have the emotional maturity to actually listen to the whole discussion, engage in it, think about it, because through doing that, that's where we address the issues of society. So with all of that set up, let me just ask these questions. Just listen and think. If sex is a biological drive for personal pleasure, is it possible that this has led to a hookup culture that views a sex partner as an experience to enjoy rather than a person to cherish? A sex partner as an experience to enjoy rather than a person to cherish. Question number two. If sex is a biological drive for personal pleasure, could it be that this has led to a redefining of marriage from an essential building block of human thriving? That is the idea of male and female and children as the building block for society and civilization. Two, a social legal structure for personal happiness. It's just a question. Here's another one. If we believe that sex is more of a biological drive for personal pleasure, has this led to prioritizing adult freedom over compassion for 56 million children that have been aborted in the United States? It's just a question. Think about it. Here's one more. If sex is just a biological drive for personal pleasure, is this leading us to an unsustainable declining birth rate in America and in the world? That's an interesting question. We'll come back to that in the future. I just want to tell you guys, as I ask these questions, I know they're very provocative, and I'm actually looking forward to being done with this series. And here's why. It's not because I'm getting a whole bunch of hate mail. Just getting a little, not a bunch. Okay, just getting a little. And let me just say something to some of my haters. I've learned over the years that responding on social media is actually stupid. It just is, okay? So anyway, sorry athletes and Twitter accounts. Don't get it, but you do it. I don't know why. Anyway, so let me just say something. When people say the culture is changing and therefore we need to adopt to truths for a new culture, let me just respond with something very simple. Those who are ignorant of history, who ignore it, are destined to repeat the same mistakes of history. So if you think that what we're experimenting in our culture today is new in the thousands of years of human experience here, you don't know history. And the reason why I'm ready to be done with this series is because the burden of reading the psychological journals, the medical journals, the forecasters, the futurists, the science behind actually what's happening to deprive the world of human thriving and the direction that we're going creates so much sorrow. And most of us don't carry that. We just live in our life, and if the money's coming in and things are going my way and I got a date this weekend or my spouse isn't kicking me out and the kids are doing okay in soccer and all that kind of stuff, life's great. But we live on a planet with people. And what we're doing, is it making it better? Or is it making it worse? Are the people who are leading in the thoughts, the cultural shifts, experimenting with the human race, do they have everybody's best interest at heart? Or are they embracing ideologies that really historically we can go back and go, oh yeah, we tried that. It doesn't work, okay? So having said all that, here's what I'm going to do today. I'm not going to answer all the questions I just discussed. What I'm going to do is this. I'm going to commend to you this, that in the Bible, God places a high value on children. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that. Now, the idea that the birthing, adopting, rearing, and supporting a culture that values the next generation is a place where human thriving takes place. And I realize that everybody in here can't have a child, and some of us shouldn't have a child, okay? If you're 62, don't personalize this. You don't need to go out and try to get pregnant, okay? You don't have to do that. That's not what I'm talking about. And I also realize that there are some people that are infertile that would love to have children, and it's so painful to even sit in a conversation to talk about the value of children because that's your heart's desire. We understand that, and we grieve with you for that. And there are some people here that are not in a relationship that they should be having children right now. So I'm asking you to think above that. Let's think bigger than that. So those people who have the opportunity to bring children in the world or bring children into their family through adoption, those people who are involved in raising children, those people who are involved in supporting those who do. By the way, school started. Let's give our teachers a hand. They made it through the first week. Teachers, people that work in the medical fields and work with, like, everybody that supports children in a culture, that's an awesome thing. The Bible commends that to us, and I'm going to show you why today. And so we're going to look at a few truths today. I'm going to put the scriptures up on the screen so you can just follow along there. And there are three big reasons I'm going to give you what the Bible says about why children are good for us as a culture, good for the world. And then we'll talk about reasons why people don't think they should have children and reasons why it really helps us all. So here we go. First of all, in the Bible, we see that God places a high priority on children because children brings this image of God he created in male and female together, and we experience God in a special way through children. First of all, we do that because children are the fruit of God's plan for marriage. Children are the fruit of God's plan for marriage. Let me show you the passage. In Genesis chapter 1, starting in the very beginning of the Bible, we see God laying this out. God blessed them, male and female, blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. I think this metaphor for fruitful is an interesting metaphor. You don't plant an apple tree in your yard to look at the leaves, right? You plant an apple tree in your yard because you want apples. The fruit, the good produce, that which is healthy, wholesome, nurturing, he calls childbearing the fruit. What's also interesting in this metaphor of fruitful is the idea that all fruit, the seed of the fruit, is contained in the fruit itself. And so most of the time we don't realize or think about the fact that fruit is also generational, that the children that are brought into the world have within them the potential to bring the next group and the next group and the next group. So by bearing children, we actually participate in the perpetuation of society. And that's why this metaphor is used in the early chapters of Genesis. And so we see right in the first chapter, first two chapters of Genesis, we see the creation of, first of all, Adam and Eve. And then from there, the creation of marriage, coming to the end of chapter 2, we've got this brief little interlude, and the very next thing that happens is they have kids. So humanity, male and female, marriage immediately happens, and then children happen right after that. What's also interesting in the passage is that Adam and Eve don't pause to travel this new world that's been created. They don't take time off to get their career started. They don't stop to, like, build a house. They don't make sure that they've got their student loan debts all paid off. Like there's not this interlude. It just moves really quickly from the creation of humanity to marriage to children. Now, there is one interlude in chapter 3. For those of you who've read the passage, you know that in chapter 3, Adam and Eve decide God doesn't have it all figured out after all, and they violate God's law. They do the one thing he told them not to do, and they did it for selfish reasons. Because if we do this, it will somehow better us and beat you out, God. And they ate from the tree, and they sinned. That brings us to the second principle here. The first one is that children are the fruit of God's plan for marriage. The second one we see in the passage is that children are actually the hope. They're the hope of God's plan for humanity. So right after the curse, the world's going downhill, right? Everything's bad. Watch what Adam says. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 20, Adam named his wife Eve because she would become the mother of all the living. Anybody who says that the Bible places a low view on women hasn't really read the Bible. Adam says Eve, and names her Eve because the word Eve literally means living in the Hebrew, gives her the name living and says she's going to be the mother of all living. God told them in chapter 3, verse 15, that through the seed of the woman, there was going to become a Savior who would save the world from its sin. And Adam is acknowledging this and saying, it's not through the men, it's going to come through the women. By bearing children, the hope of the world will be reestablished. Now, some of you would say, well, that's only talking about the Messiah, Jesus, right? Well, actually, it's talking about more than that. In fact, look at Malachi chapter 2, verse 15. God is speaking to the people and says, has not the Lord made them one? In flesh and spirit, they are his. And why one? Because he was seeking godly offspring. So guard yourselves in your spirit and do not break faith with the wife of your youth. In other words, stay faithful to the wife of your youth because I'm expecting that the hope of the world is going to come through godly offspring. So God's plan for the world is that people would be brought into the world and the future comes about by godly children coming into the world and bringing things forward. And so we have children are the hope of God's plan for humanity. The third principle that we see in the early chapters of Genesis is children are also an expression of our partnership with God. Children are expression of our partnership with God. Chapter 4, we see Adam lays with his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. Watch what she says. She said, with the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man. Underscoring, gentlemen, how irrelevant you really are. I think this is interesting, don't you? With the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man. What is she saying here? What she's saying here is she's reaffirming that humanity is not simply just biology. We're not just simply a collision of physical chemicals coming together. It's more than that. In fact, she's reaffirming what God did in Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, when it says, the Lord God formed man out of the dust of the ground. That's the physical side. But then he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. That living being is literally the word we use for soul. And what it's saying is that humanity is not just physical. We are physical and we are spiritual. There's more to us than physical. And what she's saying is Adam and I, we were able to provide the physical material through our DNA, but the Lord provided the breath of life into the child. And the child is living because of what God did. Partnership with God. This is very important. Now, how many of you have actually had the privilege at some point in time or the pain of being in the birthing room when a child is born? Quite a few of you, right? I mean, I hear this universally from people. I mean, there's a lot of bad things that happen in the birthing room, right? Husbands pass out and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that happens. But one of the universal experiences that I hear from people is when I held that baby in my arms and looked into its eyes, I knew there was a God. Because there is no possible way that the DNA from my wife and I could form together to form this child and make it a unique person with a living soul. And through childbearing, we actually have the opportunity to partner and experience what God is like in bringing a child into the world. And so children are fruit. They're the fruit of marriage. Children are the hope of the next generation. And children give us a chance to actually connect in a unique way with God in the process. So very, very interesting. In fact, Psalm 127 says it this way. He says, unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. In other words, the building or achievements that humans can do, if they're not partnered with God, they'll not amount to much. The same thing with security. If the watchman is trying to protect the city, but he's not doing it in partnership with God, it just doesn't work very well. And then he says this. He says, in vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. I love this. The farmer goes out and works and works and works and works and then goes to sleep. And while he's sleeping, the seeds germinate. The rain falls. The crops begin to grow out of his control. In other words, there's only so much that you can accomplish without God's help. And then he uses the metaphor of children to show you that when God is involved, you've got something unique. Watch what he says. He says, sons are a heritage from the Lord. Children, a reward from him like arrows in the hands of a warrior. Our sons born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be put to shame when they contend with their enemies at the gates. The place where business is transacted, where futures are decided, where things are done. Children, which are not possible unless God is involved, they provide something unique, something significant, something that stands the test of time. They provide a legacy. They provide a legacy. So, what are the reasons not to have kids? So let me give you the reasons that I normally hear. I'm going to give you four, and a lot of people might have other ones, okay? But for those who are capable of having children and decide not to, here are the most common ones I hear. The first one is, I want to save the planet. That sounds kind of funny at first, but it's actually very real. There are a lot of us that are under the belief that the planet is overcrowded, and we're actually doing a service to humanity to not put any more hungry mouths on this planet to feed. In the 70s and 80s, that was what was being touted, spoken. Today, that is a myth that's been completely overturned. 97% of the countries on the planet are now at or below replacement, like zero population replacement of people. Back in the 1970s, the projections of how many people could actually live on the planet is half of what it is today. Through technology, innovation, farming techniques, we can do so much better than we did before. And you say, well, like, why then are there people still starving on the planet? The reason why is because of injustice. People who study the issues realize lawlessness is the reason why places on the planet, the poor stay poor and the rich stay rich. It's a real big problem. Do you realize in Japan that in 2010, there were more adult diapers purchased than there were diapers for children? What happens to the population of a country when there are fewer people to innovate and take care of the people that are getting older? The Wall Street Journal put out a warning to the United States based on tons of economic research. Let me give you one of their charts. 1800. Number of children per woman, 7. Ouch. From 1800 to the present, that birth rate has continued to decline, except for when we had the little bump in the baby boomer generation, and it's now at 1.93. It's actually a little bit below that. That's in the United States. That's including everybody, immigrants and all the people that are here. That's the birth rate in the U.S. today. Replacement is 2.1. So now we have fewer people in each generation. And what most people don't realize is that it's hard to turn this thing back around when you start going in the wrong direction. So let me give you an oversimplified chart. This is kind of the Tim Hawks way of explaining it. Now, those of you who are more sophisticated than that know that it's more complicated than that, but let me just show you what happens. Say if you have 10 people in your population, and 5 of them are women and 5 of them are men, and they all like each other, and they all get married. And the fruit of each of those marriages is an average of 1. In the next generation, 20 years later, if they like each other and pair up, this girl gets left out. If they have 1, in the next generation, you have only 2 people, and hopefully they can mate, okay? Man and a woman. And within 60 years, you're down to the generation of extinction. So think about it this way. This generation is counting on this generation to take care of them. But not only that generation to take care of them, these 2 generations over a 40-year period are counting on this generation to take care of them. And then these 2 generations are counting on this generation to take care of them. That's the current trend that's happening. Do you realize that in the future there will be no ethnic Germans in Germany? No ethnic French people in France? No ethnic Anglos in the United States? Because those are the populations that are choosing to decline the most. In other words, if you decide to have 2 kids, you're not ruining the planet. You're actually providing economic stability for yourself and those who come after you, okay? So that's just an interesting one. Let me give you a couple more. So the first one is, I want to save the planet. Second one is, the world is too messed up. I hear that a lot. The world is too messed up to bring kids into the world. So, who then is going to bring kids into the world? Now, I know that this is really risky for me to actually say out loud, but it's true. The majority of the families that are bringing children in the world are coming from the poorer groups on the planet and those who hold the most radical ideologies. I would consider it a contribution to society for you to bring kids into the world and to raise them well and to launch them to be change agents. That's part of our calling as human beings. Because to say the world is too messed up, I don't want to bring kids into it, is actually to say I'm going to let it get worse. I'm not going to contribute to make it, but I'm going to let it get worse. The third reason I hear from people is I'm too messed up. I'm too messed up. Like, I don't need to be a kid's father or mother. Like, I'm just too messed up. So here's what I would challenge you with. Every statistic, every study that I've seen, for men particularly, men who get a marriage, a mortgage, a child, and a church, grow up at a rate that's astounding. And they tend not to ruin other women in the culture that need to be moving in that direction as well. So, consider the opportunity to take responsibility for something outside yourself as a motivation to get yourself headed in the right direction. Here's the last one. This one's the most common to me, and that is, I have dreams and goals, and I just don't think I want to have kids because that would limit my dreams and goals. I mean, that's a possible choice that somebody might make. Let me just throw out a couple thoughts to you. That assumes that your dreams and goals will actually be more fulfilling to you than being the parent of a child. And most of the people that say that have no frame of reference to understand the joys and the beauties and the benefits of having a child. You have no frame of reference. The other challenge that you have is as you age, it becomes at some point in time too late to change your mind. And so if you say, you know, I just want to take my 20s and my 30s and just like have a good life and enjoy myself, well, maybe you would enjoy yourself more with kids. But then it becomes too late to reverse that. It's over. You can't really turn that around very easily. I mean, people try through medical technology, but it's hard to do. In addition to that, kids grow up. And if you're really good at it, you can get them to leave the house. What's wrong with traveling the world in your 50s and enjoying that aspect of your life where you could actually be involved in both, bettering yourself, the children, and the next generation, and then exploring the fun things you want to do? Write your novel when you're 50 and you've got a little bit more insight into the world. Okay? So I just challenge us on that. Okay, the flip side of that is, why is having children beneficial? Why is it beneficial? Let me just give you some things as to why it's beneficial for you. Here we go. First of all, children teach us what it's like, teach us what God is like as a parent. You read these passages and say, God's like a father to us. God's like a mother to us. Well, how do you know the heart and the passion of God for you if you've never had that experience of being a father or being a mother? To be able to understand the unconditional love that God has for you that flows from Him. Even when you do wrong, it still flows from Him. You learn that as a dad when you love your child in this almost irrational, unconditional way. And then in the process of that, when they break your heart, you know what it's like for you to break God's heart because you can actually feel it. It makes us understand God. Secondly, it also teaches us about faith. When Jesus wanted to teach people about faith, all of these religious scholars were standing around. He walked over in Matthew chapter 18, got a kid, put the kid in the middle of the group and said, look at this kid. He said, if you guys want to understand faith, you need to understand children, because if you don't understand children, you won't get faith. It won't make sense to you. And children have an uncanny ability to be able to look into the face of their father and trust. And we have an uncanny ability to look into our own lives and doubt and not look into the face of the Father. The third thing children do is they teach us about original sin. Okay? Because we have this really stupid idea in the world that mankind is basically good. And from middle school on, it seems like we get this inner lawyer that's talking that explains that anytime that we do anything harmful and hurtful, it's not really our fault. Somebody else made me do this. It's because of this or that. And this inner lawyer keeps telling us, oh, I'm basically a good person. Well, then why did you do something harmful or hurtful? Oh, well, it's not me. It's blah, 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 blah. And we justify that. But you look at a child and you go, who taught that child how to lie? Who taught that child how to disobey? Like when you say, don't touch that, and you realize, oh no, this is something that's part of us. And here's the really cool thing about being willing to admit that we're broken, that we're sinful. It gets us running to our Savior. We're looking for help. We're looking for support and encouragement, which ultimately makes us better. And so it teaches what God is like as a parent. It teaches us about faith. It teaches us about our sin nature. It also teaches us about leaving a legacy. It teaches that life is beyond us. I had a good friend who, early in life, passed away. Great guy, did all kinds of really cool things, but they're gone, and he's gone. One of the best things he did was he brought two kids into the world. And when you look at those two kids today, and you see all the potential and the promise and what God is doing in their life and what they have to do to make a contribution to society, you look at those kids and you go, he's not gone. He's living on, making a contribution to the future because he put those two beautiful kids in the world, and they're going to make something good happen. It teaches us about leaving a legacy. It's not just about what I can get and do here. It's about what I can get and do in the world to come, in the life to come. Here's the last thing it teaches us. It teaches us about the labor of love. The labor of love. Here's what Jesus said, John chapter 16. He said a woman, when she's in the travail of labor, some of you been there? Like, it's just a terrible experience until the baby comes. And when she holds the joy of that new life in her arms, it makes it easy to forget the pain of the past, what she went through to have the child. The joy of the child teaches us that the labor of love is worth it. And for you young parents, and for those of you who can still remember the days when you were up all night, and, you know, when they decided to puke, they either puked on the best furniture or on you. And you thought to yourself, this child's killing me. It costs so much money, and it costs so much time, and it costs so much focus, and there's so many other things I would really rather be doing that would be a lot more fun than this, and I feel like this child is killing me. You know what the child is doing? A child beats the selfishness out of the parents. And that's a really good thing. And here's what we have to ask ourselves. Does the world thrive more in a culture where most people are self-focused? It's about me, mine, and my pleasure and what I get. Or does the world actually work better with people who are other-centered? Let me help. Let me take care of you. Let me work for social justice. Let me help with other things. Is it about me or is it about us? And that's why this labor of love, we need to learn to sacrifice for someone we love. And the joy that comes from that is amazing. Talk to old people. Ask them, what are their greatest joys in life? And you're not going to hear, well, I was the CEO, or I invented the technology that was, oh yeah, you're younger, you won't even remember that. It's gone. Don't think about it anymore. What people say is the greatest joy and sometimes the greatest sorrow in life has been my kids. My kid, that's my joy. It brings us to a point where we see that. So the Bible tells us that God commands to us to be a culture that values life, values children, encourages that to be part of who we are, that bringing children into the world, adopting children, supporting people and raising children, working together for the future by building into the next generation. That actually has the effect of human thriving on us. So as we wrap up this series, I just want to ask a couple questions and give you guys an opportunity to respond. So in order to keep the distractions away so you can concentrate, I'm going to ask you to just bow your head right here, close your eyes. I just want to throw this question out to you to think about. Here's the question. The way you're living your life right now, would you say you're living your life for a legacy of impact in the future? Or are you living your life primarily as a personal, self-focused experience? The answer to that question will determine your next move. Determine your next move. In just a minute, as you're pondering those things, we want to give you a chance to just pray. And you may stay in your seat and pray for a while, or you may want to pray for, with somebody down here at the front. But I'm going to open this up to a couple different groups of people. If you're here today and you desire to have a child more than anything else and you're struggling with infertility and you'd just like some people to pray with you, we're going to invite you to come down to the front and pray. If you have children or grandchildren and you'd just like to pray a blessing over them, or maybe they're wandering and they need some encouragement and you want to pray for them, this would be a great time to do that. It'd be a great time to do that. Make your way to the front if you want someone to pray with you down here. If you're single and you recognize that sexuality is something that God designed for a marriage, for children, and you say, boy, I struggle with that in the world that's so promiscuous, but you want someone to pray with you, or you just want to commit yourself to purity, I would encourage you to do that now. And maybe you're here and you would say, Tim, I don't know how to have a relationship with God, but I would love to do that. We're going to have people down at the front would love to talk or pray with you. So on all of our campuses right now, I'm going to invite the prayer-focused team to make their way up. Just kind of make your way up in this direction. And we're going to stand together and we're going to worship together. And as we do, the The people are available here to pray with you or pray in your seat, whatever you feel led to do. But allow God to use this time for you to make personal commitments and decisions. So let's stand together and let's worship Him as we respond.